Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Unraveling. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and I am so honored to share this conversation with you today. Today, I am joined by Lily Parkinson from Umiani. I've been following Lily for a while on Instagram, and I have just loved her, the energy and what she brings. It's a really unique take to the to nutrition and to bringing a complete kind of embodied approach to spirit, to our relationship with food, and like weaving all of the things that I love together. So and she also has she has trained and she studied with Mama Cacao, and anybody that is on that journey, I just feel naturally magnetized to. So I'm really honored to have Lily on the show today. Before we dive in, I'm just going to welcome Lily with her official bio, so you know a little bit more about her. So Lily is a nutritional therapist, embodied eating disorder and mind, body and eating psychology coach, yoga teacher, medicine woman and cacao ceremonialist. After struggling for many years with disordered eating, body dysmorphia and anxiety and depression, she began to seek a more embodied and spiritual path of healing through connecting with the wisdom of body and the earth. Lily's sole mission is to support other women become more embodied so that they can find freedom in their food, body and health by combining different healing modalities that encompass the body, mind and spirit to support women to live in their wholeness. Welcome, Lily. It's such an honor to have you here. I would love for you to begin by just introducing yourself in your own words and sharing a bit more about the journey that's brought you to be the woman you are today.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's a real honor. And yeah, so as the bio described, I work with people with disordered eating, who have been on a journey of chronic dieting or has an eating disorder. And it's all about finding an embodied healing path and connecting to spirituality within that, and also connecting from the heart and just living in your authenticity in order to become your fullest expression of yourself, to really live in wholeness. And for me, this work is, as you know, it's so important because of my own personal journey. For as long as I can remember, I've had difficulties with my own body, and suffered from different levels of varying eating disorders and the symptoms that come with that, and also the complications and the fragmented relationships and everything that the eating and the feelings of unworthiness that women have of themselves, and they project that onto their bodies. And I made a pact with myself many years ago when I was in my healing journey, and it was to support women to not have to experience the same things that I did, or to be able to have access to these different modalities that I've picked up along the way, and being able to support them in their own journey. And yeah, it's been a wild ride. I think also, you know, I think my experience really helps when working with other women, because I have been there. I have my own personal experience. I've tried many different modalities, and so I think that really helps. But there is also this battle that doesn't exist now, but for many years, you know, in being in my own recovery, and then, you know, always researching and learning about different foods and talking to people who are also struggling, and how, you know, that can trigger people. Well, it triggered me in many circumstances. And then talking about it all the time, talking about the body, talking about food, you know, it's, I didn't make my path easy for me, you know, choosing this line of work, but I can safely say that, you know, my, I guess, resilience through this, and my soul and my calling to do this work has helped me overcome all of that, and I want to be able to help women do the same. And so if I can, and the women that I've helped and supported before can, then anyone listening to this or anyone struggling, they can also.
Love that. Amazing. Thank you for sharing. I'd love to know from, because I know you, I think you're a little bit like me in that you've collected different modalities and sort of tools, I suppose, along the way that has led you to almost create this like this offering that's very completely unique to what you're offering, because it's only you that's gone through those experiences. But what have been some of the tools and the modalities that you found the most powerful and most beneficial to yourself, but also to the people that you work with, to help with those, like unraveling those really deep patterns around eating and around our relationship with food and that emotional attachment? What have you found to be the most powerful modalities?
I think, I mean, with each person, that the combination differs because it's what that person connects with. And I think the reason I've taken this route and I have done so many of these modalities is I like to explore, and each modality gives a different texture. It gives a different, helps you see a different layer of what you're going through, and some of those resonate with you more than others. And I like to say, you know, I'm a perpetual life student, so I'm always going to keep exploring these things because I like to go really deep. I like to really, you know, get to the bottom of things. Or, you know, I think we're always going to be unraveling the core wounds that create, you know, a disordered relationship with food and body, and, you know, all of those core wounds that show up in your life in many different ways. For me personally, it was the embodiment, and it was the connection to spirituality. I think in my own journey, it started with when I was introduced to yoga, and how then that connection to my body, but also when I connected to the teachings of yoga, that then took me on my spiritual path as well. So I was learning to embody and learning to be with the body and be with the breath, which no one had ever taught me before. I'd been in many different, you know, modes of healing. I was in inpatient treatment, psychotherapy, all of these methods that never really put the body or the core self, so spirit, at, you know, they never came into the equation. And so when I discovered that for myself, it was like, oh, okay, this is how I get there. You can't think your way out of it. You know, you have to learn how to feel. You have to learn to be that in and be okay and be aware of that embodied version, and that's always changing. So yeah, going back to the yoga. So then when I looked at the teachings and I started understanding that took me on my own spiritual path, which has led down many, many different routes. But, you know, for me, I see kind of spirituality now is its connection to life source, and its connection to nature, and connection to something bigger than us. So, you know, whether it's you know, everyone has a different term for it, but it helps to expand the closed-mindedness and the blinkers that we go through life with, especially, you know, from culture and society, you know, stay within the rules. And when I connected finally to something bigger, and it was like, oh, okay, there's something bigger out here, and I can trust, and I can be with nature, and that helps me to connect with the cycles of life, and that helps me to connect with my own cycles. And it all just started dropping into place. And I find that with other clients as well. And so, you know, the embodiment, like embodying any version of yourself, you know, but I think I'm even understanding what embodiment is, and the body wisdom, and then how that connects to, you know, connecting deeper to yourself as well. Mm.
So how would you describe embodiment to someone who is like not sure of that term?
In its simplest kind of explanation, but also is what it is, and it doesn't need any more explaining, it's coming home to yourself, coming home to, you know, it's human nature to kind of, we're always searching, we're always seeking for something, and we're always seeking for something outside of ourselves. And for me, embodiment is, you know, you go out seeking, and then you eventually come back to the source, which is you, and what you were seeking was always within. Mm. So it's understanding that body wisdom, understanding and connecting to that intuition. And for me, you know, when I'm most embodied is when I'm connected with myself, and I don't necessarily wake up, you know, fully embodied. There are practices that I have to go to, mm-hmm. help me feel more embodied. But when I'm living authentically, I feel aligned, I feel centered, I feel grounded, I'm speaking my truth, I am listening to what my body's saying, and it's saying, that doesn't feel safe, let's not do that. And I'm going, okay, let's do it another way, let's explore another way. For me, that's when I'm most embodied. And so then disembodiment is you're disconnected to those cues, and you know, you might deeply so go, I don't think that's right, but I'm going to say yes anyway, because people expect me to do this, or I have to do this. That's when you're disembodied, because you're going against what your body's telling you, and you're not listening to that wisdom. And that's how, you know, we end up creating so much difficulties in our life, and disconnection for others, because we can't connect with others if we're not first connected with ourselves.
And how do you think that like today's culture and society has played a part in, like, I feel like, to me, embodiment is almost just like this returning home. It's like it's being fully at home in my body and trust it. Like there's a lot of trust, I think, like, and it's actually quite scary, like when culture or society has actually taught us not to trust our bodies, not to listen to that body wisdom, to then actually reclaim that sense of power over our own bodies, and sense of listening, like, can feel really vulnerable. And I'd just be really interested to see, like, how you feel like culture and society has played a role in disempowering people to be trusting of that body wisdom and trusting of like who they are at their center. Because for me, like, I feel like when I work with clients, that's not in the same way, but when I work with people one-to-one, it's really about remembering. It's not new information. It's not about teaching them something they don't know. Yes, there might be some practices and skills that you kind of, there are teachings too, but actually the core of it is a really deep remembering. So I'm just, yeah, I'd love to know how you feel like the outside world has influenced this change, because it wasn't always like this, right?
No, it wasn't. And I think the key ways that we've been disconnected to being able to be embodied is, you know, the media. You know, it scares me now looking at younger people growing up and how much access they have to the media. And yes, there are more resources now available, but I think because the internet spreads so far that you get to choose what you take in from that media. And so there are always going to be people in the camp that are saying, no, it's better to be logical. It's better to think. It's better to, you know, do things mechanically rather than feel and to know. And so that's very representative of, you know, whether the masculine and the feminine have been out of balance, and for many, many years we've been living in this masculine energy and ignored the feminine. And I think a lot of this work, and I predominantly work with women, and it's reclaiming that connection to the feminine and trusting that their body has the answers, that the wisdom is within. And I also think, you know, I think it's a generational thing as well. You know, when we're born, we're connected to that intuition. We're embodied, you know, we are embodied. It's only what we learn and what we pick up from others that then disconnects us from ourselves. So that's when, you know, the media comes in, or perhaps our caregivers or our friends, you know, they have a certain set of beliefs, and for us to fit in, we abandon parts of ourselves and adopt other people's fears and beliefs and stories and make them our own. And then that's when we become disconnected from ourselves. That's when our disconnection from our spirit starts to leave us, because we're abandoning ourselves to form a version of ourselves that we think is more acceptable, more appropriate, is more attractive, is gonna, you know, is gonna have all the things, or be able to achieve all the things that we want to, because we have that distrust from ourselves, because that distrust is kind of breathed into us from a very young age, whether consciously or subconsciously, from like, you know, from a lot of the media, but sometimes subconsciously from family members. You know, they don't necessarily know that they're doing it. And I think that comes from, you know, generational trauma that exists. And yeah, I mean, that's another tangent to go on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel very much now, like, as a mother of a daughter, and I think regardless of whether you have children or don't have children, I feel like I feel like so much has happened in, like, our generation. You know, I speak quite broadly, like, I know probably not the same age, but generally, like, this generation, this kind of, where we have access to all these things. And I do feel like the opportunities are coming to us, because we almost, it's like almost our duty to heal some of this in ourselves, so that the future generations don't have to carry so much of this with them, because it does seem to be extremely prevalent in today's in a lot of women I see today, similar age to me, younger, older. Like, I feel like there's obviously a window where something shifted and these stories started to change and this mistrust started to come in. And, you know, like, I look at my grandmother, who's 101, and she does not have any food issues. Like, it was very, like, okay, that's probably not entirely true. There would have been certain issues around, you know, she was alive in the war, and there would have been issues there in terms of probably, like, fear around enough food and things like that. But in terms of her relationship with food, it's very, like, it's very practical. It's very, like, there isn't that same worry about, like, weight and what she looks like. And it was not the same as what I see in other women my age, and people, and even in like my mother's age, you know, like I see such difference. So something's obviously shifted actually in more recent years, really, to start this. So, you know, I guess I'm just curious. And I suppose it is with things like the media and being able to see more, and these pictures of women that we're supposed to look like being so in our face now, and not seeing real women's bodies as well. Like, you know, nakedness and skin is so taboo unless you are like, you know, unless you're looking at it in a magazine and it's probably airbrushed and probably quite like finely tuned. It's really hard to see, to know what real bodies even look like anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, just going back to kind of like the generational and ancestral kind of influences around food, is that I think there's like a bit of a delay in how that kind of gets expressed. So for example, like you're saying, your grandmother being alive in the war, and there will have been that this fear and scarcity around food. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to play out in her relationship to food or even her daughters, but that does then get carried through the genetics and the DNA onto younger generations. So, and then, and like with anything with genes, that gene can be there, but it's the environment that may trigger that. So then we're in this environment where you are seeing lots of particularly shaped women, and there are a lot more stresses in life. And I mean, not a lot more stresses. I mean, living through
different stresses,
different stresses. But I feel like in our current day and age, it's constant because of that constant reminder from the media. And I think now, you know, it's starting from a younger, much, much younger age. And I feel like since kind of like the 80s to now, there's been a longer period of what the ideal body should look like. Whereas I think probably before that, it wasn't so fixed. And also it wasn't so much in your face. One of the biggest things that I always come back to is, you know, I've traveled around the world quite a lot, and I've worked with Indigenous communities, and is plugging in and tuning into different cultures, and that being able to, you know, it's not even that each culture has an ideal body shape. It's just that each culture has a different, almost genetic body shape. And so that's where I think it's got so confused. And that's why there's so many issues globally, because the media has taken one body shape and applied it to every woman on the globe. Whereas, you know, so for example, you know, when I go to the Amazon jungle, the women are, you know, they're about 4.5 foot, you know, so this, you know, Kate Moss, and I'm saying Kate Moss because that was who was on the front covers when I was growing up, and that was like a key, like, you know, it must look like Kate Moss. You know, we're not down with the kids and what.
No, like, I have no idea who it is these days.
Showing my age. And you know, so cultures like that also, you know, if that's the universal body shape, then, you know, people with dark hair and darker skin and naturally shorter, or, you know, women who are from Africa who are not, you know, taller. And for example, you know, it just, every culture has different genetics and a different body shape. And I think we've just been blindfolded and made to think that each woman, you know, to be culturally accepted, then you have to look in this particular way. And yeah, and it's the media and that, you know, magazines and advertisements for anything, you know, even food and drink and clothing, just anything, cars, you know, it's that one thing. So it's constantly there. And I think where we've been living in the masculine, and especially women have not been able to always stand in their truth and use their voice to say, actually, no, that this isn't right, because they've been also affected over generations. And so we haven't, women and mothers haven't stood up to say, actually, no, that this isn't right. We're kind of, you know, like been scaremongered into thinking that that is the correct one. And so I think there's a real relearning process that many women are having to do right now. And like, you know, with your daughter as well, is, and it's really hard because it's like, what's right and what's wrong, because it's so ingrained in us, like what we can say, what we can't say, you know, or what we shouldn't be saying. It's this whole relearning process to go, actually, no, that all bodies are different, and you know, it's not okay to compliment, like, it's when we meet people, we shouldn't be complimenting them on how they look. We should be complimenting them on, you know, their strengths, what they're about, not, you know, how, what their hair looks like, or do you know, all of those things. But it's
that, like, inner vibrancy that comes through, rather than like, yeah, I found that a lot when after I had Sophia, actually, I used to get so many people going, oh my goodness, you're so slim now, like you look amazing. And I'd be, and actually at the point, I was really, I felt that made me feel really uncomfortable, because I was like, well, does that mean there's something wrong with me because I'm that much slimmer than I should be after having a baby? Or, you know, like, it actually had other impacts. Like, and it used to just baffle me how people would comment on my size, and as if it was like this real positive thing, because actually probably when I've been at my slimmest in my life has often been when I've been in my most unhealthy mentally. But yeah, it's still seen as like, oh, you look really slim, you look really skinny, oh, you've lost so much weight. Like, that is always seen as this like celebration. And every time people have said that to me, I've not felt good. It's actually made me feel like it doesn't make me feel comfortable. And I'm really, really conscious of not ever commenting on anybody's size in any way. Like, I don't, it's not my place to, like, I have no, like, it just doesn't even enter into my mind now. But it has been a deconditioning process for myself, even though I have the awareness and I know how it impacts me, it's still something that, like, is kind of ingrained in that, oh, you compliment someone on how slim they look or how their hair is or their makeup or whatever. I just find it's really hard sometimes to step away from that narrative because it's so ingrained.
It's so ingrained. And even doing the work that I do, you know, I have to, you know, it gets so easy to get pulled back into it, and people that aren't aware are kind of sat there waiting for you to comment, or you didn't, you know, oh, didn't you notice I had, you know, I've had my hair cut, or, you know, my mom always says that to me. And I'm like, that's, you know, what your hair looks like is the least interesting part of you that I'm interested in right now. You know, I want to know how you are, and don't want to know, you know, what clothes you've bought or you know, that you had your hair cut, or you've just bought some new makeup, and like, how do you look? You know, that's not what's important to me, you know. And it's really interesting, you know, it's happened recently, and even, you know, with the work that I do, being around family members, and I think, you know, like, I mean, I don't force my work on anyone. If people are interested because I know what being having something about your body and food forced onto you feels like. So I've been in these, you know, situations where, you know, family members, and they're talking about all the diets that they're trying and how much weight they've lost, and, you know, they're signing up to this and this, and you know, since, like, I just, for me, it's, why would you go and see your family members or your friends and then start talking badly about yourself? You might not be talking badly about the other person, but when you're saying you look great or you look, you know, you've lost loads of weight, really that's, you know, a projection or a reflection of, oh, I feel like I need to lose weight, or, you know, like I don't feel comfortable in myself, and you know, putting people on this pedestal. And that these kinds of conversations, you know, they might feel okay at the time, but then you go away and it's subconsciously it's affecting you, going, okay, I need to go on a diet, or I need to, you know, look like this, or I want to look like this. And then all these spiraling thoughts set in, and it's just, yeah, it's just so ingrained. It's difficult, and it's really sad. And I think it takes women coming together and communities coming together and raising awareness and putting in those boundaries and having a voice, whether it is at home or with your friends, and saying, actually, I'd rather we didn't talk about diets or weight or whatever, you know, let's talk about something that's positive. Let's not judge ourselves or judge others on their appearance, you know. And it takes women and to have the courage and bravery to kind of step outside the box and say, actually, guys, this isn't okay. You know, I don't want my children to grow up in this environment having the same struggles that I do, you know.
I think that, like, that awareness is the most important thing, isn't it? Like, even if you're not necessarily, like, even if you haven't, the awareness around our language, I think that's what I've really noticed, particularly since having Sophia, is just like the way I would speak about myself, or if I'm having, like, I'm generally quite positive now. I've done a lot of work to get to that point, but there's still times, you know, there's still parts of me that I don't feel 100% in love with, and there's still parts of me that that I struggle with at times. And, you know, I might see a photo and be like, oh God, you know, it's still, that's still very, I think that's quite human. Well, it is certainly in my life. It's like, it is human to maybe at times have those like wobbles, but just being so aware of the language I use and not being instantly ready to like criticize myself, even not just around like weight and the way I look, but even in just in the way I speak to myself, you know, like if I make a mistake, I'm really conscious of not saying, oh God, I'm such an idiot. It's actually like, oh, I've made a mistake, because I don't want Sophia growing up thinking, oh, if I make a mistake, I can't make a mistake because it makes me an idiot. We even have a book that's like, it's okay to make mistakes. And now, and even through that, it's like reframing the language I use to talk about myself. And I think that for me is probably one of the first steps to actually helping change my perception of myself, because the words we speak to ourselves are what like become a lot of our narratives often, aren't they? And they're often words that we've heard from others that we've taken as our own. But I think just being aware of that is like a really powerful thing to just notice and see if you can catch yourself before, like when you're saying these things.
Yeah. And that's a really big part of the work that I do, is, you know, changing the narrative and bringing in self-compassion and that mindful self-care, because like you said, the words that you say to yourself, you know, they, words have energy. And so when you're repeatedly saying that, you know, you're just feeding yourself that energy, and you get completely blocked and stuck. And they have so much power. Words have so much power. We don't realize. And just as our thoughts have so much power. So when we're trying to realign the way that we're thinking and the way that we're speaking, when we get to a stage where we can do that, you know, it makes such a huge difference. And one of the tools that I use, for example, is, you know, speak to yourself as if you were speaking to, you know, a child or a pet, or you know, speaking to your best mate. So just trying to catch yourself, you know, or like when you wake up in the morning, you know, it's you know, like talk to yourself like, oh, should we go and have a cup of tea? Or like, let's go out, so let's go for a walk. Why don't we go for a walk, you know? And, you start to shift your mentality of blaming yourself for everything. You like be creating that, and this is how you get into the body as well, is you're creating this relationship with yourself rather than going, oh, you've done this wrong, or this, and you know. And you know, also another tool that I use, for example, is, you know, maybe when you're journaling or when you're speaking, it's, you know, rather than like, oh, I did this today, or you know, this didn't go right, or whatever, is seeing it through the lens of the body, like, how did you and your body do this? So today, like, you know, I you know, there was a rabbit in the garden or something. Just because I'm looking in the garden, there's a rabbit. It's like my eyes allowed me to see a rabbit in the garden. Like, how great is that, that my eyes could allow me to see that? And oh, I went here and I did this, and you know, a negative thought pattern might be basically, so like if you've done something wrong and you would normally be blaming your body, you could say, actually my legs allowed me to even try that. Before, I would have never even tried that. So even having that ability and that opportunity to try that, it doesn't matter that the result wasn't necessarily as I'd hoped it to be, like, I had the opportunity to do that, and that's a place to start. And I will have the opportunity again to try that again, you know, and trying to shift it. And, you know, without the amazing makeup of the body and the ability of the body to do all of the things that it does, I mean, what goes on underneath skin level on our body is incredible. And that's what I teach a lot of my clients, is about different systems and like how incredible they are. You know, it's insane what they do. And we have no idea, we have no, you know, not necessarily, we don't really consciously think about how our arm moves or how our leg moves or how we're breathing, you know, all of these types of things. So connecting into that really helps to reconnect reconnect us with the body, and rather than seeing it as an object, to seeing it as this like incredible part of us. And that can really help to shift the language that we have and the relationship that we have with the body.
Seeing ourselves as like this place of awe and wonder,
yeah,
instead of like just berating it for what it's not done or what we deem to be a like failure from the body's point of view.
Exactly. And I think, you know, coming back to the spirituality part of it and the energetics and nature, is like, you know, you don't blame a plant or a tree for its leaves, you know, not, or its flowers not growing or blooming. You know, you don't blame the flower. You look at its environment, right? And you say, okay, what's not supporting this to grow in the way that it needs to be? And you then nurture it. So this work is identifying, you know, what parts of your life aren't nurturing you in order for you to feel whole, to be able to live in connection and be in the world as you were born to be.
I'm interested to like hear from you, because I think when I was growing up, I just saw, you know, like eating disorders. There was like the sort of very labeled eating disorders that everybody, like, you know, that you were made aware of. But what I didn't understand until I was older was actually that there was just this huge spectrum of disordered ways of eating, rather than necessarily labeling each one, you know, like,
yeah,
there's just so much complexity amongst that. And I'm yet to meet many women who don't have an element, even if it's a really tiny element, of some form of, you know, whether it's some kind of food, like not allowing themselves a certain food, or they have, you know, taken certain diets, or they just, you know, like, it almost does become an unconscious thing. The way we, like, some of our eating patterns. I know for me, I still have a lot of hang-ups around like certain foods and certain things that that actually bring a little bit of anxiety to me. Like there's still things that I'm unpicking and unraveling within myself. And actually my pregnancies have both really, really helped me unpick that, because my body has not literally let me eat the things that I want to eat in terms of what is healthy, because there are sometimes I have literally just had to eat, like this pregnancy, for example, I was eating salt and vinegar Pringles because it's the only thing that stopped me from feeling sick. Literally, I tried to eat, I couldn't eat, I could not even smell a cooked vegetable. There's just so, and that those experiences have actually helped me unpick some of those fears around eating. So I'm very grateful for that. But anyway, I completely diverted. What I wanted to ask was, how do you see these things? Like, I think they're quite sneaky and subtle, a lot of these little patterns and habits we've picked up and these sort of conditions around how we eat and how we view our body. Because I think a lot of people would think, I don't have an issue with food. But I would just be intrigued from your point of view, how you see these little things subtly, like on a day-to-day level, showing up for people, and how that might actually have a knock-on impact to them emotionally and physically and spiritually.
Yeah, so I mean, we all have our own individual relationship with food, and a lot of us will have different habits that, you know, there's no one normalized way to eat. Again, culture, age, you know, we all have these habits that we've had, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that's an issue. What brings the issue or the challenge is that if they are affecting you on a deeper level. And so what I mean by that is, if you know, some of the key things are avoiding food groups, avoiding particular foods without kind of any real medical reason. Now, this gets quite difficult because, you know, like, for example, gluten, a lot of people do have a reactivity to gluten, but they aren't necessarily gluten intolerant. And so you can sometimes pick up on, and this wouldn't, that wouldn't necessarily be the sole issue that someone might be displaying, or behavior around food that they might be displaying, but it might be become an excuse. Oh, I can't eat gluten. And so therefore you then start cutting out bread, and you start cutting out pasta, and you start, you know, and then that becomes an issue. And sometimes it can creep up on you really quickly. You know, it could just start as something is, you feel a bit bloated, so you're going to cut that out. And then, you know, if there's other things happening in your life that's stressful, and your body starts changing, and you can sometimes get hooked on it, which is how the behaviors and the, you know, disordered eating, and then, you know, if depending on that person, if that might develop into an eating disorder in the future. And some other key aspects are emotional eating. Now, emotional eating, we all emotionally eat at different times. It's natural, you know, we were soothed as children by mothers. Emotional eating isn't an issue unless it's your sole coping mechanism, and it's a coping mechanism that you're coming back to very frequently. You know, if you break up with someone, then yeah, it's totally okay and normal to have some ice cream, or, you know, have whatever. But it's like, okay, you're coming home from work every day and you're feeling stressed, and the ice cream's, you know, either every day or every kind of couple of days, and you're just kind of, you're using that food to check out of
what's the actual stress or like the issue that's going on in your life now.
Sure. Yeah. Also, you know, thinking about food a lot. So if food's constantly on your mind, thinking about what to eat, what you can't eat, what you shouldn't eat, that can also start to affect us in the long term. And, you know, there are so many, it will show up differently in so many people. It's whether you're able, there has to be a certain level of self-awareness of, is this affecting me in my day-to-day life? Is this affecting me showing up the way I want to show up? Is this affecting me being present in my life, in my relationships, at work? Because it's especially an issue that needs supporting if, you know, you're trying to do something and you're always thinking about the next meal or what you shouldn't eat, or when you've got some food, feeling anxiety, like, I can't eat this, you know, I'm on this diet or I'm doing this. And it stops you being able to live in this life. And when you're constantly focused on that, then you're not showing up, which is why I say, you know, showing up authentically and being in your wholeness, because you can't be when your mind is elsewhere and you're focusing on trying not to, or not wanting your body shape to change based on food, or using food to numb you out. That's when it becomes an issue. But I think, you know, as you said, you know, most women will have some form of relationship with food that probably at some point needs addressing in one way or another to feel fully free. And yeah, it takes a long time, and it is a process. And as you age and as your body changes and as these life experiences that you have, as you go through different life experiences, your relationship with your body and food changes. And then that just gives you another layer to unravel and to be aware of. So
It's almost like I think for me, I just got to the point where I was like, I just want to feel free of, like, I felt like I was really trapped by what I can eat, what I can't eat, and the rules I'd set up for myself. And whilst I was never like super unhealthy either, you know, like in you know, like for me, it didn't get extreme from a physical point of view, but it certainly felt completely controlling, like it was taking over my life. Like I wouldn't go, if a friend invited me for dinner, I'd want to try and subtly ask what they were going to cook, or just say, I'd actually then say, oh, I can't eat this and this, so I'm just going to bring my own food. And I'd take like a Tupperware of salad while they're all eating like this lovely big like pasta dish or whatever. And like I felt so sad about it. There's still moments now where I just feel like, oh, I just wish I could just completely feel free of this and completely not worry about what I'm eating. And I'm definitely better than I was. And again, Sophia's been such a teacher for me in that, because I am so desperately want her to grow up having a healthier relationship with food. And I don't think necessarily for me, I don't think it was family. I think it was peers. I think it was when I went to secondary school that it really kicked in. I think it was when I was like hitting puberty and I was around, and then I was seeing all this media. I can remember the day where I suddenly noticed I didn't look like other girls, like necessarily my body wasn't this washboard, tiny waist, flat tummy, like, you know, lovely, you know, like perfectly shaped boobs. Like I remember that day. I can remember the exact time when I suddenly was like, oh, I don't look like this. And so I think I've completely again gone off on a massive tangent now. but for me, it's like about just feeling liberated from those toxic thoughts. So I guess what I was going to say is, like, if someone is feeling in that space of, like, I'm just fed up of feeling controlled by food, or, you know, of these thoughts, like, what are some of the things they can do to start supporting themselves and helping themselves through that? I mean, obviously working with you and working with someone one-to-one, but are there some other things that they could do just to help themselves, just start to shift that feeling of being trapped?
Yeah, and it's this journey is multi-layered, and in just quickly in response to what you said before sharing some tools, is that your relationship to food and body is a reflection of your relationship to life and the relationship you have with your experience in life. So there's a lot of inner work to do in terms of, are you living in alignment with how you want to live? Like, what are your visions? What's your goals in life? And then so many of us are actually disconnected to that. But when we're restricting food, it's like, it's the control, or the control of our body, because somewhere in our life, we don't feel safe. And so food and our body seems like the only thing that we can control. And if we control that, then everything will miraculously be okay. And we know cognitively from a mental level that that's not true. But the body doesn't know, that's not what the body feels, because the way that your body is playing out, or when you see that the internal reactions that the body's having isn't aligning what you rationally know. And so I think one of the key things is getting a practice or coming to a journaling practice, really, and coming to some key questions that helps you to map out, your visions, your goals, and finding that reason for being, really trying to connect with what it is that you want to do, getting to know yourself, and then finding, step-by-step actions into how you can start moving towards that. Because when we're not living in alignment with who we are, what we want to be doing, and like being our true and authentic self, that's when we start using the food. That's when we try to change our body or restrict food or binge on food, whatever behaviors that are displaying. It's because it takes a lot of energy to hide who you really are and not be who you really are, and it's painful, and that's why these behaviors play out. Other tools would be, finding a way where you can move your body that's fun and pleasurable, rather than exercise, not pushing or pulling your body, but having a movement practice, whether that is yoga or I really like Qigong, or wild water swimming, or just walking. I do a lot of walking, and just finding dancing as well. Actually, dancing is a key one. Finding a movement practice where you're not attaching a goal to it, and using it as a moving meditation, so connecting with your breath. Even though yoga, some people will come to yoga and they'll think it has to be a particular movement. It's like, for me, it's just exploring the body and like, oh, what if I do this? Like, how does that feel? The yoga that I teach and I practice is very non-traditional. It's very like, it's just an exploration. If I did that, what does that feel like? Oh, that doesn't feel good. So I'm going to move back here, and just trying to stay as present as possible. And then, just a self-compassion and self-care practice.
What's your favorite, what do you do for yourself in terms of like rituals and self-compassion practices? What do you find the most effective?
Yeah, so I always move at some point during the day. I walk a lot, or I dance. If I've only got 5 minutes, I put on one song before I'm going to do anything, and I just move, and I just allow the thoughts to dissolve off me, basically, and I just get lost in it and like connecting to this, the body within, basically, who's going, I'm going to move like this today, you know, and it helps me understand where I'm at energetically, emotionally in that any given day. I also have a daily journaling practice. Being in nature for me is like, if I don't see a plant or a tree or you put my feet on the grass, then I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, but like, I like to do it, you know, I like to ground. That's how I come back to myself. And then obviously, you know, I work with cacao. So I have a regular cacao practice, and that allows me to open the channels of the deeper felt sense that sometimes you're able to access through other modes. And then I put the music on, then I journal, then I sing, or, you know, I do all of these. It connects me to my heart when I'm, you know, when it's harder to get there.
Yeah, I love cacao for that.
Yeah. Those are my core practices, but every day, depending on where I'm at, you know, there are other different tools that come in. And I think those pack of the toolkit is so individual for everyone. And yeah, it's really beautiful when people find their key resources. And I think the hardest bit is going to those practices, because you never go to the practices that make you feel good when you need them the most.
No.
But that daily ritual, you know, is so important, you know, whether we have to miss, you know, whatever we used to do just for that extra half an hour, like, it's so worth it, you know. It's so important that we put ourselves first and come to that self-care, because at the end of the day, if we don't have that, if we don't cultivate that relationship with ourselves, then we can't show up in the world how we want to. We can't show up in our relationships. We can't show up to ourselves. And so, yeah,
that's the hard truth, that it's just not possible to be the person we really want to be if we're not actually showing up for ourselves. One thing I really felt like really landed for me is that, I think so for lots of people, I think they often like don't necessarily see that connection of like eating and like their body image with the soul and with that sort of spiritual connection. But for me, what you were saying about how like so much of the restrictive patterns and so much of the control is coming because we are like, we're not connected to ourselves and we don't have that reason for being. That was the word you use, reason for being. And I love that, because I think it really, really landed for me that actually until we take the time to find that out. And for me, that is through spirituality, and that is through like doing deep soul work, and it's not going to be that path for everyone, but I can see now that connection, that how if we don't do that work, then we can't really look at those patterns and those behaviors, because it's really just a coping mechanism to hide from that feeling of being lost and not being who you know you are supposed to be. And that's how I felt for years when I was at my work, my most controlling with my food and my most anxious and my most miserable was when I felt the most lost about why I was here on this planet. Mm. And I didn't feel like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. So I can see now the pieces.
Yeah, just being able to connect to source, connect to something outside of yourself, because so many people live in this way of like, this is how the world works. You go to school, you get a job, and that's also fine. However, this is what I see in so many people is whether it's food or whether it's alcohol or whether it's, you know, their job becomes their obsession, it's like their way of checking out, because this, you know, this is coming back to embodiment and like coming back to yourself. And when you've been seeking and actually you realize that it's all within, it's like that connection to the natural world and to yourself is, and the soul is what you're looking for. And that connection is how you then can then show up, because otherwise we're just searching, or we kind of know that there should be more to it, but we don't, you know, we're looking at it for it, for looking for it in things outside of us, but actually it's within. So when we're embodied and when we're connected to our spirit, it's like, yeah, these life is still going to happen, bad experiences are still going to happen, but you have the tools and the inner resources and the knowing that you can overcome it, that like in nature, you know, the cycles, and that everything's always in moving, nothing stays the same. And you know, that's the same with emotions and pain. It does change, and we have to be able to go with the flow and be open to the possibility, because when we're not open to that, then you know, what are we open to? What are we here for? Because you know, there is so much more out there, and I think people are seeing that. You know, I think the pandemic has helped people really step into that, and it's being talked a lot about it more. But again, you know, when it comes back into the embodiment, you might be able to understand it, but until you start really living it, you know, it's not going to have the effect that it has the possibility to have.
It's like it's bringing it in all ways, not just from a mind way, it's all ways. I love that. I think that probably is a lovely place to end on that big possibility note. I will pop in the show notes all of your links, Instagram, all of your how people can connect with you. But is there anything else, anything that you would like to share with the listeners before we say goodbye?
I think I would just want to say that for anyone who is struggling or has, you know, struggled before, or they know someone that is struggling, it's very hard to reach out and ask for support, whether that's professionally or from a friend or from a family member. But I hope, you know, that this podcast and you know, other resources that you may have come across is a reminder that you're not alone in that journey, and that it's so common. And you will be able to overcome the challenges, and there is so much waiting for you on the other side when you do find that freedom, and when you get to embody, and when you find that connection to spirit and soul and self. You know, as I said, you know, experiences still happen, but the way that you can respond to them and the way that you can navigate life changes completely. And yeah, that freedom brings so much more than just not thinking about food or not just thinking about body. It's so much bigger than that.
So you are our beacon of hope. Thank you so, so much, Lily. It's been such an honor to speak to you. And I'll pop all your details into the show notes so people can catch up with you and see all the wonderful ways that you work with others. I think you work one-to-one, and is there any other ways that you support?
At the moment, I'm working one-to-one. I've got some group coaching programs coming in the autumn. So feel free to get in contact about those. There's a waiting list. But I, you know, working in community is great. But the one-to-one support is for you know, the radical and deep transformation. That's really important to have that one-on-one time.
Yeah, and you have lots of beautiful anecdotes and snippets on your Instagram. I know that would definitely spark people to start to just like see things in a different way. So I'm sure I would urge everyone to go and check out your Instagram and yeah, and read your amazing words. Thank you so much. It's been an honor, and thank you everyone who has listened and tuned into the show today. It's always, I am so grateful for everyone who shares with us and who joins us in this space. And if you enjoy this episode, please do share it with anyone that you feel might resonate, and also get in touch with me or Lily if you want to keep the conversation going. For now, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.